Welcome back to AMP Legally Speaking, Frost Brown Todd's podcast dedicated to the laws and regulations and culture of hemp and hemp products like CBD. I'm Jonathan Miller, the chair of Frost Brown Todd's Hemp Practice Group. I'm also the general counsel for the U.S. Hemp Roundtable, which is our advocacy organization, which has helped advise politicians and elected officials and appointed officials across the country on developing laws and regulations. And now in my role at Frost Brown Todd and on this podcast, we're helping interpret those laws that we help draft. I like to joke that I've been in politics for so long that I had to invent a whole new area of law in order to practice it. In a sense, that's what's happened, and we look forward to sharing our expertise and war stories with you. Today, I'm joined by a veteran attorney, Alan McDonald. Alan has been a partner at Frost Brown Todd for some time. I guess you were at Frost Brown Todd before it was Frost Brown Todd. You were at Brown Todd and Haybert as well.
Yeah.
And has been on the corporate side of the shingle, mergers, acquisitions, private equity, investments, and all the kind of stuff that big and small corporations need counsel when it comes to building their corporation or merging or combining with other entities. And today we're going to talk about a big issue for a lot of hemp and CBD companies, which is capitalizing your organization. We spoke earlier with Olivia Snyder Bryant, who shared the perspective of what do you need to do to start a company? What kind of name should you pick? What kind of corporate form should you take? What are the steps you need to take to incorporate or set up an LLC and all that kind of good stuff? Today, we're going to take for granted that you've done that or you're considering doing that. And now you're in the process of trying to figure out how you're going to find the capital in order to run that organization, to be able to afford the equipment and personnel and all the kinds of things you need to build your business in this climate. It is a challenging area these days. There has been a lot of money that has sat on the sidelines while the FDA decides to figure out how it's going to regulate the industry. A lot of investments have turned away from the industry because of the regulatory uncertainty. But we see regulatory certainty around the corner, and we know that there are going to be a lot of our clients and other hemp businesses that are going to be engaged in the process of trying to identify money. And we've found a good Sherpa for you in your hunt for money, and that's Alan McDonald. So Alan, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you, Jonathan. Thank you for that introduction.
So, Alan, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of companies in the hemp space across the country that are seeking growth capital. But as simple as I made it in my introduction, it's not that simple as asking people for money. What you just can't simply open up a shingle and start asking people for money and deposit into a bank and spend it. That's not how this works. What are the big picture issues and concerns that a business needs to consider as it starts soliciting dollars for these purposes?
Well, I think the obvious question is, how are you going to stand out from the crowd in this industry? If maybe you're fortunate enough that you've conceived of something particularly unique that you'll be proposing to do, in which case maybe you'll have the advantage of being, you know, the first mover. But I think for most people, you're usually not doing something that's that unique. So you have to find other ways to attract investment. I think that one of the best ways to stand out from the crowd is to prepare a well thought through written business plan, because if you can show people that you've thought things through, that will engender confidence. And the person who has impressed the investor is more likely to get the money. The components, I think, of a good business plan, I'll just run through a few of them. First of all, you know, kind of the obvious thing, what are the sources and the uses of the funds? How much money do you need, and how do you propose to use it? And in general, the more specific you can be, the better you, the better impression you will make. You know, you want to talk, maybe you'll be talking about, you know, fairly broad categories if it's a startup company. If you have particular space needs, you'll be talking about rent or purchasing property. You'll be talking about the person, the people you'll need, and, you know, salaries and administrative costs. You'll be talking probably about having a marketing budget, things like that, various types of budgeted items. And then I think what investors are going to be looking for is how you've identified a market that you're going to target for your goods and services, and who are your likely customers. In addition, what are your distribution channels? Are you going to be looking to rely on distributors to circulate your products, or will we be trying a direct-to-consumer strategy? And then in general, what is going to be your marketing strategy? How do you propose to market your goods and services and to target that particular market you're aiming at? These days in particular, you have to be aware of your supply chain considerations. You know, what resources is your business going to need, and where are you going to get them? You probably will have space and equipment needs that you need to cover. Also, a certain number of administrative functions. For example, you know, how many people are you going to need, and what are they going to be doing? And what data management systems are you going to need? How soon are you going to need to invest in hardware and software products? Then kind of the more general things are, is you have to provide a realistic assessment of the material risks of your business. It can't all be, just wildly optimistic stuff. Investors are going to be looking at what do you see as the potential problems that you could encounter, and how would you propose to address them? And finally, probably the most important factor for sophisticated investors is your management team and their experience in the business area where you propose to go. Another factor that's really important is, do you have support from reputable business advisors? Are there business people who have shown the confidence in you or your idea sufficiently that they're willing to stand by you with support? So again, I think those would be the components of a written business plan that would show that you've really thought through your business proposal that you're putting in front of people who are going to be contributing money.
It's a great roadmap, and I couldn't stress enough what you were saying about identifying the risks and being fully transparent about them. So many people get into this space; they're great salesmen, they're great saleswomen, and really know how to hype up a product. But you really endanger yourself if you're not sharing also the downsides and the potential risks with potential investors, because that's when you can get into some real trouble. That's why you need to have good counsel on hand to be able to advise you about those sorts of things. So,
and it's also an issue of credibility. You're going to make a better impression if you're realistic than if you're, not only thinking about the upside.
Yeah. You know, a line I always give to every client that comes into my door, and that I encourage businesses to give to every investor, is that if you're completely risk averse, if you want to avoid all risk, don't get involved in hemp industry. Don't invest in my company, because there are natural risks for all the reasons we've been discussing on our other podcasts, whether it's the FDA or the DEA or state laws and regulations. So it's good to be fully disclose, and I think it, as you mentioned, it earns a lot of credibility and demonstrates you're a person of integrity as well. So, Alan, we spoke again with Olivia Snyder Bryan about business formation, and she went through all the different types of organizations. If we're still in that phase right now, are there any particular forms that you should consider, or ones that you should avoid when you're preparing to seek capital?
From my perspective, and from the perspective of, you know, I think raising money, it's not necessarily the business form that's so important as is the tax treatment. These days, you know, the ordinary income tax rate is now 21%. So the difference between, you know, capital gains treatment and also the ordinary income treatment, which is what any distributions to shareholders will generally be taxed as, is not that different. So there, these days, I think the C corporation is the more attractive vehicle. A C corporation is, of course, it's a tax classification. A limited liability company can elect to be taxed as a partnership, or as a C corporation, or as an S corporation. The S corporation partnership taxation is a lot more complicated and results in a much more record keeping for the company, as well as more complicated reporting for the individual investor. So the beauty maybe of the C corporation, in addition to kind of the lower tax treatment these days, is just the reporting simplicity. If you're, you know, making distributions to your shareholders, you're providing them with a relatively simple form 1099 that just sort of states the amount of money that they received in the form of dividends, and they can just add that to a line item on their tax return. Whereas, you know, if they're a C corp or an S corporation or a partnership, they're getting a much more lengthy statement from the company, multiple pages. Generally, it's called a K-1, and it just is a lot more difficult, and results in more complex reporting for the individual investor. And if your investors are not sophisticated investors, but rather just, you know, friends and family, they're not going to really want to have the complexity that goes along with those more complicated forms of taxation. So really, I think the C corporate, a business organization organized as a C corporation, is the optimal business form.
Yeah, as someone who is one of those non-sophisticated investors in several companies, I do appreciate that kind of advice, and wish people would take that kind of counsel. So, but okay, we're ready to go. We want to start raising money for our initial round of funding. What are the considerations that should be at the top of your mind?
Well, obviously, the first one is how much do you need to raise. You have to realistically, as we talked about earlier, the more specific, the better. The first question I would have is, do you have a prototype or some sort of proof of concept, something tangible for, you know, investors to evaluate, or is it just an idea? It would be great if you had a product or a prototype of something that you could show people so they could evaluate that. But that's not always the case. Then you have to figure out who are your likely early supporters. Who are they going to be? Some of those would be obviously your friends and family, people who, you know, want to help you out and are likely to invest because they know you. You're probably going to tap your professional networks if you're, you know, on LinkedIn and very active on professional social media or some other network that you have. You'll probably go to those people who know you and would be willing to take a risk given you know, the information that you can provide them about your business idea. If you're, you know, if ideally, I guess at this early seed round stage, the, you know, kind of the gold standard would be finding angel investors. Angel investors are, you know, usually retired business people or others who've, you know, like to really support upcoming business entrepreneurs, really like to help them out. They're really important, not just for their money, but for the professional advice that they can give you. You know, they've been there, they've done that, they have contacts that could be very valuable for you. And there's usually somebody you can lean on to really, you know, so your learning curve isn't quite so steep.
So let's say we want to raise $1 million, that we've determined that to get the key equipment for my farm or from my business, I need to get $1 million. What would you advise someone who is looking at a 1 mil raise?
Okay. Well, I'm going to assume that this is not your seed round. You've raised enough money to kind of get up and running and at least get your business started. In this round, first of all, you're going to need some financial statements. So maybe at this stage you have an accounting, you know, you have an accountant or a good, you know, financial advisor who can help you out with that. Now, generally at this stage, it's much more efficient to raise money privately from a small group of investors than to try to rely on a public solicitation on the internet. So some questions you're going to ask as you seek private money would be like, first of all, do you have seed round investors who would be willing to contribute more? You know, have they made, you know, relatively small contributions to the first round, and now that they see you're making some progress and think you're on the right path, would they be willing to commit more funds at this stage? Here's where I think you really do want to look for an angel investors or angel networks. Sometimes they have formed a venture fora where you can go and pitch your idea. There are also business accelerators in, you know, most cities where they're looking for promising ideas, and you can apply to see if you can get both support, financial support, as well as space and other kinds of support. Then business accelerators can really be helpful. You'd probably want to also look for business organizations. You know, chambers of commerce have resources and various types of groups that would be available to you. You could attend meetings or, you know, pursue participation in some of those and make contacts that enable you to find people who are looking to, you know, support entrepreneurs. I think if you have to use the internet to, and if not going to use private investors, I think realistically these days you're not going to do any sort of public solicitation other than using the internet. You have to be aware that now securities compliance is going to be critical, because when you raise money publicly using general solicitation, there are many more rules, securities rules that come into play. So you're going to probably need some advisors. Now, in the last 10 years, crowdfunding has become a reality. Now the federal government has enacted crowdfunding exemptions. And those are helpful because they are conducted by a crowdfunding portal, which is kind of a type of broker for small businesses, startups and the like. And they can usually provide you with not only a platform in which to offer your services over the internet, they'll give you templates for the types of information that you need to provide to comply with the securities laws. So there's usually a crowdfunding portal in most medium to large cities. There are often very many, and there's probably one in your region that would be a good resource if you're going to need to tap, you know, the internet as to find investors.
Now, how does this change when we're now looking maybe to raise $5 to $10 million to ramp up manufacturing or distribution? What else do you need to be looking at?
Okay. Well, again, it's going to be very important to see if you now have developed enough of a reputation and credibility that not only you have an ongoing business, you have revenue, but do you also have supporters who can make introductions to larger sources of funding? Again, it's always better, I think, at these stages to try to raise money privately because it's more efficient, nothing else, than trying to raise it publicly from a large group of small investors. And again, at this stage, you know, angel networks are still in the picture, but now you're probably large enough that you can look for sources of venture capital. You know, if you've got some revenue and even some earnings, you can begin to show venture capital the types of performance that they'd be interested in. Also, will these people be able to introduce you to wealthy individuals? You know, family offices, very wealthy families, will have their investment arms where they're always looking for up and coming businesses. So when you've kind of established that you've got an ongoing business that has prospects, you know, you might become appealing to them. And you may also be a target for private equity. There are a lot of various private companies that are looking to invest in small market companies that show the potential to really grow. They usually will have some parameters in terms of, you know, revenue and earnings or, you know, cash flow that will show the possibility of and the prospect for success. And, you know, again, if you can't raise funds privately, you'll need to go to the internet. And at the $5 million to $10 million class, you know, you stepped up in terms of the securities compliance that you're going to need. So you will more likely than not, it'll be critical to have both legal and financial accounting advisors to get you the types of information that you're going to need to have and to steer you through the regulatory process that you'll need to comply with.
Well, finally, you've advised a number of hemp companies that have gone public. Let's say we're ready to do that. What factors do you need to look at before you elect to go public? And we only have a couple minutes here, but what kind of advice do you give to particularly hemp and CBD companies when it comes to going public?
Well, by this stage, you're going to need to have revenue, and in most cases, earnings. You're definitely going to have to show some cash flow statistics. But I think the big question is, are you really willing to operate your company in a manner that's completely open to public scrutiny? When you're a public company, we call it open kimono. Basically, everything that you do is going to be out there in public. You're going to be reporting to the Securities and Exchange Commission. Are you going to be comfortable with that, or are you going to try to seek large investors who can provide enough money for you to, you know, grow and operate still in private, where you don't have quite so much, you still have a great deal of privacy about your operations and your financials. And you have to think about, why are you going public? Do you have realistic alternatives to an IPO? But if you decide to go, the most important thing, I think, is that you have to plan ahead, well ahead, to go public. You're going to need to have a capable management team, people that investors are going to show confidence in. Have you thought about financial and accounting controls? You're going to have them in place before you can go public. And that means, having good systems to report the financial results. You're going to have to focus on administrative efficiency, cleaning up your organizational structure. For one hemp company, an Australian company that had substantial operations in the United States, we helped them out by reorganizing all their U.S. subsidiaries in a manner that was logical to the public markets and the people who are going to be evaluating public companies. And do you have adequate data management systems these days? Having data, being able to manage your data in a safe and secure manner, taking into account, cybersecurity is going to be critical. And at this stage, it's absolutely essential that you have professional advisors. You're going to go public, you're not going to need, you're going to need to have a professional auditors, not just, accountants, but people who do auditing. And you're going to need, a legal team that's familiar with the public markets and how they operate. You're probably going to also need to think about getting other types of advisors, such as investment and shareholder relations type people. So there will be a lot of additional expense to going public. So that's why I think before you take that step, you need to really think through why you're doing it, and are you willing to operate in a manner that's going to be completely public and subject you to criticism and input and evaluation from all sorts of public sources.
Yes, opening the kimono. We'll leave on that image. And Alan, thanks so much for sharing your thoughts. And if anyone wants to get in touch with Alan, his email is amcdonald@fbtlaw.com. Mine, as always, is jmiller@fbtlaw.com. And we appreciate you joining us for this episode of Hemp Legally Speaking, Frost Brown Todd's effort to share our knowledge about the laws and regulations of hemp and CBD for companies and firms that are interested in the space. Thank you, Alan, and thank you for joining us.